Here we are at St. Louis with RacerX Online, Steve Cox. Steve, what's going on?
Not a lot. We're just trying to talk over Irv Braun. He's shut up for a minute, but it won't last.
There is no one that can talk longer about nothing than Irv Braun.
And inaccurately. A second ago, he said that James Stewart's wearing Alpine Stars boots. And a little while ago, he said this is the first track all year that only has one triple.
No. Yeah, he's terrible.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
He doesn't really understand it. But the man can talk.
He just keeps talking.
Yeah, he just keeps talking.
Yeah.
So I guess you just get
That's
the job. So anyways, hey, thanks for doing this for me. Pulp MX podcast. There's Irv. and so what's your thoughts? Getting good now, right?
Yeah, I really dig it. And it's times like this that you really figure out what these guys are made of, you know? Because, like, you know, RV, you know, can handle pressure and some maybe even thrives on it. Dungey giving up some big points last week, and all of a sudden now we're going to see if he can respond, because if he starts not responding, then that's going to be a problem. You know, he's going to have to respond now.
Yeah.
And I really dig it, actually, and it gives us something to talk about. And then you throw Reed into the mix, and everything's all screwed up.
Right. Are you pulling for one guy or no?
No, I mean, no, not really.
You know what I'm pulling for? What? I'm pulling for Reed to come out and, like, dominate and just show these guys.
Like kill them the last
four
races?
Yeah, just be like, hey, guys, check it out. Like, I don't care, like, about him beating. I just want to see it to, like.
Yeah.
So everyone knows that Reedy's still a badass.
Yeah, he is a badass.
Right.
I don't know anybody who doesn't think Reedy's a badass.
Yeah.
If they don't think he's a badass, they haven't been paying attention.
That's
ultimately it. But that doesn't mean that Villopoto's not a badass. Dungey's got his own badass thing going. But the thing is with those two, I mean, Dungey has got his butt kicked, basically, for the last few weeks. And, you know, he's got to respond. If he doesn't, he's not going to be over.
Let me ask you this. Talking to Holly this week, he told me that he talked to Dungey for an interview, and Dungey kind of blew him off a bunch of times and wasn't his normal happy-go-lucky self.
Right.
And Holly said that he turned to his cameraman and said, there's no way Dungey is making the box tonight. Because he could tell, as a racer, Dungey was, like, rattled.
Right.
Do you believe in that? Do you see that?
That's hard to say, man.
Yeah.
I honestly thought Dungey would have been rattled.
Was Holly drunk?
No. Holly knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that he's not. But the thing is I would have honestly guessed that Dungey would have been a little rattled going into the final moto at the Donations with, you know, Weimer having a bad moto, et cetera. And, I mean, he delivered hardcore, you know.
Yeah.
So
even Southwick, he delivered.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know that,
right.
You know, I don't know. I think he's hard to read, honestly.
Right.
Like, Dungey, in times that he doesn't want to do an interview, that doesn't mean he's rattled. He might just want to be staying focused, and he wants to stay focused on something and not bother with it. I've had tough times a couple times doing interviews with him, but, you know, mostly it's, you know, if I've ever had tough time with him, it's just trying to get him to talk.
Who's the toughest interviewer you've ever had?
Right now it's Dungey.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's hard to get him to do an interview, because he'll do the interview, but you can't get anything out of him.
Because
it's all, like, you know, cliche after cliche.
Who's the toughest guy
cliche
to get an interview with?
Oh.
In your history.
In history?
For you.
Chad Reed in 2004.
I was at Yamaha, and I can vouch for that.
Yeah, it was horrible.
And nowadays, who is it? J-Law?
Yeah, for us. I mean, we're not Transworld. Transworld gets all the interviews
only
with J-Law.
Only Don does.
Yeah, but nobody, he doesn't talk to us at all.
Right,
it's basically impossible. So I guess that would be the hardest one, because it's impossible. It's not going to happen.
So when people say that the media doesn't talk about him, it's not that we don't want to. I would gladly do an interview with J-Law.
Yeah,
as
so
would you.
I
would, as would you. We can't.
No.
Right.
He doesn't want to talk to us. And on top of that, you know, not to be a jerk or nothing, but, I mean, it's not like he's putting in all of these crazy awesome results that we have to start talking about him.
No, exactly. And I think his sponsors eventually will find out if he can't get back to where he's at, then you better be good at interviews, a la Nick Way.
Right, yeah.
Who
Nick is awesome.
Who has built this following with results that
Kevin Windham, I mean, don't warrant. And, I mean, sure, Kevin has podiums, but he's – I think, I don't know his contract or anything, but I think over the years he's had some pretty bad years, and he came back the next year with a contract that was worth a lot of money, purely because the people on the team knew, well, he still has potential, he can do what he can do, but ultimately the people love him, and so we want him on our team.
Last round of the East Series, what do you look for? Purcell, will he hold? Well, I mean,
he'll probably win. But you know, I'd love to see Wilson get a win, just because I feel like he got kind of hosed, you know, that with the government thing and all that. And the two other rookies, Baggett and Barcia, both have a win. And I'd like to see Wilson get one, because he was actually faster than both those guys most of the year.
Right.
So, you know, I'd like to see him get one just because it seems right.
Right,
you know?
And you like this track? Looks good.
It does look good, yeah. And I like that the sand sections, except, I mean, there's that weird inside one, yeah, over there, but the sand sections, in my opinion, should always be straight. They shouldn't have turns in them.
Right.
Because when they have turns in them, it's one line.
It turns into one. Yeah.
But this one's cool. It's like old school, late 80s, early 90s, where they just have that quick little straight sand thing, and you just have to kind of get through the ruts in it and get to the other side and keep going. I like that.
Cool. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Here in the pits with Simon Cudby, photographer extraordinaire. Simon, how you been?
Been good, thanks, Steve. This is actually my first race back for a month or two. Took some time, had to take some family time off, and it's good to be back here and seeing all my friends and that in the pits and all the riders and that. It's good.
I haven't seen you for a while. Yeah, exactly. You've been following the series though.
And, yeah, for sure.
Heartbreak over RV's crash.
Yeah. I mean that was a bad one for sure. And you know, I saw some clips of it online, and that, you know, looked really bad. And obviously, with him out now, and it's looking good for Dungey, obviously, to be able to wrap it up tonight. But, you know, bummed out for Ryan Villopoto.
Yeah.
To looks like he'll obviously miss a bunch of outdoors too.
And people know you sort of as a photographer for Racer X, but you're really that's you have a lot else going on, right? What else do you shoot for? Who else do you work?
Just
that for.
Well, I'm not an employee at Racer X, but I have a good contract with those guys, and
yeah.
Davey Coombs and Brian and those and Billy over there have always been really good to me, and I'm listed as a senior photographer there.
You are,
and I'm they've been really good to me.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But I do run my own business, and I have other clients to sort of fill in time.
Yeah.
Some sort of almost out of industry stuff like mechanics,
for
example. Mechanics were in Valencia in California. They're really good to me. We went up to all the NASCAR shops this week to shoot a bunch of stuff for their catalog and for ads and that stuff like that, and shoot, you know, other moto stuff for some, you know, clothing, gear companies, that kind of stuff.
I kind of want to lead you toward the NASCAR thing. You've been inside NASCAR pits. I mean, you've had all access, right? Everywhere you want to go.
Yeah.
What's it like compared to a motocross, supercross crowd? Like, what's the vibe like with teams and people and all that?
You know, that's one of the reasons I love motocross, is because it is a little bit more laid back. You know,
yeah.
The NASCAR guys, probably because I don't know any of them,
mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, you never can quite feel at home there.
Yeah.
But, you know, and coming to the pits at a supercross or motocross, I know most of the riders and mechanics, and it's, you know, you feel at home here, and, you know, they're almost like your family, you know. But going to the NASCAR thing, it's a bit different, and it's, you know,
it's just
definitely
bigger business.
Big business. Yeah. It's the big leagues for sure. And, you know, the last thing you want to do if Dale Jr. comes in for a pit stop is be standing behind the pit wall and have your foot in his air hose for the tire changer.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we ended up shooting a lot of pit stops at the NASCAR races for mechanics wear by using a pole with a remote control camera and stuff like that.
Just to get out of the way.
Because it's really big business. And as I say, the crew and all that kind of, you know, you just don't want to get in anyone's way.
What are the drivers like? I mean, there's a lot of money there, right?
Like, I don't really know any of them.
No.
You know, there is a lot of money, and they all fly in and out on private jets and
helicopter, you know, in and out of the speedway.
Yeah. I went to the garages this week or the shops with mechanics wear, and you go in these things, and like the Chip Ganassi race shop looks like a hospital inside. It's spotlessly clean, all white. There's cars everywhere, all in different various states of being put together. And, you know, the fabrication shops and suspension shops and engine shops and all that. And Richard Childress Racing was great as well, you know.
Yeah, and is it, what's being down on pit row like that? I mean, I've been a mechanic in the mechanics area, but it's got to be pretty intense, huh?
Oh, yeah, like, for sure. Yeah, really intense. When you see those guys put their finger up in the air and spin it in a circle, it means there's been a spin out on the track, and you know that all the
everyone's coming in.
And you sort of take a deep breath and blast away with a camera and hope you get what you're looking for.
Wow. And so and you ride a bike?
Yeah,
what,
I ride.
What kind of bike you got?
I have a 2010 Honda 450. And,
all right.
Kind of have a little side deal with the Honda guys to help me with a bike, and Bill Savino there's helped me with, you know, ride a Honda, which I'm very grateful for, and it's a great bike. I didn't get to ride too much last year because I went to every round of Supercross and outdoors, and that was, you know, as you know, a ton of travel, and midweek you're just burned. So this year I'm trying to get out and ride a bit more.
And then let's talk about photography a little bit. Now, you see a lot of guys with the cameras and like the technology has allowed the average guy to shoot pretty good photos, but yet they're not quite there yet. What is it about your photos and your eye that maybe other guys don't have? Because I'm not trying to blow you up here, but everybody kind of recognizes that your photos are the best in the industry. So what's the deal? Because I could buy this same camera, right?
Yeah. Well,
so, I mean, what is it?
Well, firstly, thanks for the compliments. I
don't want you to give
that.
All your secrets away, but what is it?
Well, I come from a commercial photography background. I went to college to learn photography first. And I always get emails from people like, hey, I want to be a motocross photographer. And I always tell them, go and learn photography first, learn the basics, learn exposure. And when I was learning, we were, obviously shooting film, and we learned how to print all our own stuff. So you get a real good understanding of color balance and all that kind of stuff. But I think compositionally, that's where you can make a difference with your photos. You know, you got to think about what's in the background. You got to think, and writing myself a little bit too, I can look at a turn and say, okay, they're probably going to do this around that turn.
Right.
And then you kind of visualize the shot you want, and then technically you produce that photo,
Right, right.
So, that's I think, I don't know if that's a difference or not, but that's what I do,
Yeah. And what could be one thing that the average dude could do better with his photos? Like, what would be one thing that you helped me with my Running Man setting on my on my camera, but what could a dude, what's one piece of advice you would offer anybody?
Well, when I started shooting action, actually my friends at Mechanics Wear, there's a guy there called John Caper, and he's like, you got to buy a 300 lens. That's the lens to have. And I was like, no, I can get away with a 200. And he's like, no, the 300, that's the lens. And as soon as I bought the Canon 300 2.8, which is the big white lens, that made all the difference. The photos definitely have a style to them and a look, I think if you go out on a track with a camera with a regular lens on, a standard lens, let's say, or a short zoom, your photos just look kind of like, they don't have like this pro style to them,
uh-huh.
So I actually end up always shooting like with a 300 lens, which is the long telephoto, or a wide angle lens, like a 16 or 17 millimeter lens, because to me, kind of everything in the middle kind of just looks, standard,
I like fisheye because it makes me look skinnier.
Yeah, well, a fisheye is a great lens too, but that's one of those lenses that use it more than a couple times at a race, and
the effects.
It looks cool because it's a fisheye, some of the shots might not be that great, it can be overused.
And this is going to be hard for you to answer, but last question: is there one photo you took that's your favorite? Is there just one that something happened?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I was at Millville, I think probably in 2005 or 2006, and I think that was the year. I can't remember what year it was, but I had this photo of Ricky Carmichael on a Honda, and it was from practice. And there used to be a really tight turn before the finish line there.
Yeah, the left-hander?
Right-hander coming in. Right before it. And as you come into it, there was a big wall on the inside, maybe 2 or 3 feet high, where the track had, over the years worked its way down. And Ricky had come into that, and he's going through the turn, not super fast, but... Mm-hmm. His right hand was digging into the wall side, and I didn't actually see it. And I was on the plane, once you shoot all these photos at these races, you end up working on the plane when you're flying home. And the mechanic, Tony Berluti, was there, sitting sort of on the row opposite me, and he's looking at the photos I'm going through, and I'm clicking through, and the one of Ricky comes up, and I click past it, I check my photos if they're sharp, and I keep them, whatever. And Tony's like, oh, go back. And I'm like, what? And I looked at it, and he's like, oh, look at his hand. And that was like, that photo ended up being like, I think on the cover of one of RacerX's calendars one year.
It's funny how I figured you would struggle to remember, but you just that photo, right?
And it's tough because, you're always trying to, every race, come up with something new. But I think, As I get older and go to more and more and more races, it's really difficult to come up with something new. And I think you see some photographers, like, for example, in Racer X, there'll be a gate pick, a two-page spread photo, and I'm like, wow, that's awesome. But you don't know whether that guy just got lucky by, putting on a fisheye and shooting this weird angle. You don't know how many great other photos he might have got. So when I go to a race, I have to deliver a lot of good photos, So consequently... it's difficult to come up with those super creative shots because, quite frankly, some of them are luck.
Yeah,
And I don't have the
the premonition of
I have to deliver good photos all the time, you know.
Okay, I said that was the last question, but one more.
Yeah.
Have you ever had either like Feld or the AMA or a team come to you and ask if you had a photo of something to prove something, or machine wise, or has anybody ever said, hey, we want to see what this team is doing to their bikes. Do you have something that we can look at? Has that ever happened?
No, that's not happened, but I have been out to like some of the test tracks in California, where I live in Orange County. So all the test tracks are in Corona and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gone out there sometimes and a rider will be riding around and they've got a certain set of forks on that, you know, the average guy, you wouldn't even be able to tell,
right.
But they get pretty paranoid about you shooting something like that. So
they'll be like, hey, don't shoot that one.
Yeah, almost like you've got an X-ray camera that you can see into the fork legs or something. I don't know.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, cool. Hey, thanks.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot.
This is the Pulp MX podcast, and I got Jason Wygant on the line, who I wanted to do one of these with on Saturday night, but he got busy, I got busy, and we never got a chance to do it. So let's quickly talk about Seattle.
We got busy on Saturday night. How about that, huh?
Yeah. I don't even know if we can tell people that we roomed together this weekend, because is Transworld or Racer X going to get mad? I don't even know.
I don't know if we're allowed I don't want to use the word piggyback, but I don't know if we're allowed to do that. But the upside was that on Friday night when we were sitting in the room bench racing and watching old tapes for hours, we realized we better go out like into the public, because it was too weird to just bench race for like 9 straight hours in the room. And then we met the greatest Supercross fans of all time.
I know.
It was nice upside.
That was a little weird. Yeah, before we talk about the race, let's go there. So we decide that watching the world's greatest Supercrosses and old nationals maybe isn't the coolest thing to do in the world on a Friday night in Seattle. So we go to Rock Bottom Brewery, where we order something, and the waiter proceeds to tell us that someone has bought us a round.
Yes.
And
he wasn't very specific about it either.
No. And so then upon further investigation, the guy comes up, introduces himself, and says that they bought the round. And I'm thinking, okay, does he want to get us in the sack or what? But turns out they just know us. They just follow, you know, you and I and whatever. But the weirdest thing was, and they were really cool, really good guys. The weirdest thing was the one guy saying, I bet you guys get this all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, no.
No, this is round one. It's never happened before.
Yeah, no, this is, nobody normally buys me drinks for, you know, something I do on the internet.
To bench race, yeah. But man, they knew everything. They knew all of your podcasts. They knew, I think, the due date of my child. Like, it was impressive.
They got you to do a Mike Farber impersonation, which is...
Yeah, they asked me to do a Mike Farber impersonation. These guys, Farber's in Washington twice a year, which would be Seattle and Washougal, and, well, was. Yeah. And somehow they even knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, and
they were great guys.
And then the one guy ratted out his buddy, because his buddy was a little inebriated last year when Villopoto won his first ever Supercross.
Yes.
And the guy started crying. He was just so happy.
Yes, yes. We got as much information from them as they got from us, which is usually the case. Like, everyone always thinks we have all this crazy inside scoop. But they had a lot of cool info from Hill and Villopoto growing up in the area. And
yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, no, those guys were really cool, and just the best part was, and then when we were talking, the one guy's like, man, I knew you guys would just bench race like this in real life. And I'm just like, man, these guys.
Well, I think I did say to them, well, yeah, we're so bad that we were actually just going to be in the hotel for 9 straight hours tonight, bench race, and go to bed, but at least we came out into the public.
Yeah.
Be a little less dorky.
And they thought that was awesome. That we were in the hotel watching videos. I don't know. It was cool, though. It was nice to meet those guys.
It really was.
And they sent me a photo of the crier next to a Ryan Villopoto fan, which was awesome.
Crying. And then crying. And the other guy, Corey, who looks like Andrew Short, got his photo taken with Andrew Short. So they had a banner weekend.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, it was pretty funny. Pretty good time. So I know that playing the what-if game is very dangerous. What if Ryan Villopoto was healthy and at Seattle? That track was right up his alley, right?
Yeah, man, that was a stake in the heart and then a stab in the back, all tied together, because first, I'm sure they were disappointed that he wasn't there, wasn't in the title hunt. It was like the dream scenario, going for the title, come Brian in Seattle. And then the track turned out to be super gnarly, which had to favor him.
Oh,
he's an outdoor guy, you know, ruts, he's shorter, he can get through that stuff. I mean, everything was falling his favor except him not being there.
Yeah, except for the one thing that really mattered. Kevin Windham, man, what a ride. Like, there's just no doubting him. It just, you knew it if he got anywhere close to a top five start in the main, it was over.
Yeah, you know, sometimes with Windham, when it's so obvious that he's going to win, that's a problem. You know, he starts thinking about it, or it's pressure or something like that. And he's even this season, he struggled with that a few times. But, man, after the heat race, he was 3 seconds a lap faster than everybody else.
Yeah.
At that point, it didn't matter if there was pressure or even if he started last. I bet you he could have had arm pump the whole 20 laps.
I know.
And still won.
I know. It was just a phenomenal ride. He was tripling onto that thing and then tripling off in the heat race. Then nobody did it at all. Nobody even tried.
No. And then in the main, a couple of riders were trying to double, and Dungy actually crashed there. I mean, It was – it looked like his front tire was just a knife, and He was just – slicing through the ruts where everyone else was grabbing on. And I had not seen bikes just stop forward momentum like that on a dry track ever. Never seen anything like it.
No, I know. Holly was probably losing it in the booth.
He always does. And he can lose it in any conditions. That's his versatility.
He's just good like that. And a rider that I would have loved to have seen up there with K-Dub was Millsaps. Man, Millsaps fell down the first lap. Came from pretty much 19th. The only guy behind him was the not wanting to be there, Chad Reed. 19th to about 6th. Pulls in the mechanics area of the problem. Falls out of the top 10. Comes back up to 5th or whatever. Like, Millsaps was on it.
Yeah, he won the other heat. I think he was the second fastest guy.
Yeah.
But he didn't have a chance to show up. But honestly, getting 5th yet with that kind of race was impressive. And the only other rider I'd say that was even trying to race and not just trying to not crash was Tommy Hahn, who got second. He was actually charging.
Yes. Yeah.
But no one else really was besides Millsaps and Windham.
Did you guys notice in the heat, I believe Tommy only got 4th or something in the heat. But did you notice him come from way back? Like, were you guys noticing that in the booth? Because I was observing. Hahn, and he was on it in the heat race, too. It was just like K-Dub, only he didn't have quite a good luck because he came from way back.
I can't say it rings a bell in the heat race. Right. I don't even remember.
Yeah, no, he was so good in the heat that I figured he would do good in the main, you know?
But I think the whole story on Tommy is, and he'll tell you this himself, where was this? We thought this would happen all season long. He was not riding like himself.
No.
Certainly not riding like he was outdoors. This is long overdue.
Yeah. Hahn, I have to say, there's many Saturday nights that I walk away, and I have no idea how Tommy Hahn did or rode or remember anything from his race.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, because he has not been able to get in that group. I mean, besides the Ryans or even Reed or Stewart at some point, you know, everybody else has been in the hunt at some point.
They have a moment. They have something, or even somebody gets landed on. Whatever.
Yeah.
You remember, somebody has a moment, even privateers and all that, that you're like, oh, I remember this race, this heat race, this practice.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Tommy Hahn. I can't think of one thing.
Yeah. The only thing I do remember, Dungy crashed in the first turn of San Diego, and Hahn managed to follow him from last all the way through the pack and probably could have passed him but didn't because it was a Suzuki guy.
That's a good point.
And then when Dungy had a bad night in Houston, he got behind him and did the same thing. I don't understand why he wasn't able to ride like that at any other race. Finally, he rode like that again. So that's 3 times now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can ask him. I'm not bagging on the guy. You can ask him. He's confused, I think, himself.
San Diego, similar conditions to Seattle. Sloppy,
it could be something like that. And maybe
maybe
that works in his favor.
Yeah, I don't know.
Millsaps, too.
I don't know. So Windham, 2 years and 2 days since his last win.
Oh, nice.
And, well, thanks to Irv Braun for pulling that out. So that's not actually saying it could be correct.
Heard it
from Irv, it doesn't mean it's right. that's what Irv said. And then also not the second oldest, no, third oldest to ever win.
Yeah, my apologies to anyone listening to the webcast because we have the souvenir yearbook in front of us, which has stats in it. And the stats actually come from, I think, Feld's PR man, who we know is usually just a beacon of accuracy.
Yes, yes.
and a huge, huge fan of the sport in his own right.
Yes.
Just lives and breathes stats. But somehow they messed this one up because it said John Dowd was the oldest winner ever at 32 years, 8 months, and 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
So and Windham is 32 years and 2 months, so he's about 6 months short. So we told Windham this at the end of the show when we interviewed the riders, and Windham said, I thought LaRocco was 33 when he won in Indianapolis, and that's when I realized we were wrong. The book was wrong. I'd already said it, and I didn't want to sound dumb, so I said, I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that. But
yeah, so, knowing that I'm probably an idiot now.
So LaRocco won when he won Indy. He was 33.
Yeah, he was 33, so he's actually the oldest. And then a caller, we have people can call in the webcast afterwards and win prizes. A caller called in and said, hey, ironically, the only reason Dowd won at that age was because Wyndham was destroying everybody in Charlotte one year and then went over the bars and Dowd cruised past him and won. So ironically, the only reason Dowd even did win that was because Wyndham himself threw it away. And this was 12 years ago. That's nuts.
I was at that race. I remember Dowdy like winning it wire to wire, but clearly not. So
what do you think Dowd's overall analysis of that race probably was?
It probably went something like this. Hey, Dowdy, what do you remember about your only first and only Supercross win? It was pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know. I won. I don't really know what happened.
I remember I was on a Yamaha, and that was a cool night. That was a good night. It was good. I won.
When I do the arena car shows with Dowd, I'm always asking him like trivia like that, and his analysis of himself. He can analyze the other riders, no problem.
Yeah.
But himself, like in '99, he had a bunch of podiums and was like even up there in the points early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him what he was doing that year, and he said, "I don't know. I would like get third and say, how am I doing this? They're not pulling away. What's going on?" That's what ran through his mind. Why are they not pulling away from me?
Bike wasn't better. Not a new trainer. Didn't work harder. No idea. Yeah.
No, he told me his training was he trained real hard, and if he got tired, he'd just train harder the next week. That was it. That was the extent.
Actually, I did the podcast I did with Doug Henry was similar to that, whereas I asked him a bunch of questions, and he had no idea even who signed him or Honda deal or who talked to him Honda or anything. He had no idea how he got a factory Honda. Apparently, he woke up one day. He was on DJY Yamaha. He woke up the next day. It's factory Honda.
He's on the most powerful team in the history of the sport. Yeah. Team, yeah. Not really a big enough deal to...
Has no idea how it happened. But, it's kind of weird, those guys. I don't know. They really are just your Joe Everyman.
Before you leave this topic of guys winning races and not knowing what the deal was, how about the riveting, emotional, he's finally made it to the top of the ladder podium speech of Brock Tickle?
I was touched. I was just touched, I tell you. A small tear rolled down my cheek when he was monotoning his, I want to thank Shred Sticks and my girlfriend and... I don't know.
How could you not be excited?
Dude,
I don't understand.
I don't get it. I don't know Brock Tickle at all. Do you know him?
He's always been like that as far as I know. Like, I remember him from Loretta's back in the day, and we used to really have fun because he was on Team Sirius, and his name was Brock Tickle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we did everything we could to try to get him to laugh at that, but it never really.
Never.
I mean, we got ridiculous. We even did interviews where we'd run up behind him and tickle his underarms.
Yeah.
And I guess that's just his deal. I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird to dominate. He dominated, really, and it took off. And, nothing. Just nothing. Maybe the Larry Brooks podium gate. Dog tanking just scared him. He's just like, oh, God, what am I going to say? What if I say the wrong thing? What do I say? What's the right thing to say? Where's Brooks? Oh, man, you know?
I put that in your column. That's a good point. He's been shell-shocked.
Yeah. Just.
But the girlfriend was still thank first. She still was.
Yeah. You know, have you seen her?
Yeah, that's true. I don't blame the guy.
I thank her, too. I really wish I wouldn't have made that lewd joke on Twitter about her and her boobies, because she apparently follows me. So,
but didn't they give you a thumbs up kind of on that?
They laughed.
Either
her or him or somebody laughed and said it was okay, but it still doesn't make it right. But then you could make
a bad judgment there.
You could go back and say, does it make it right to make a joke about someone who you know doesn't follow, who you think isn't following you, so you know you can get away with it? Probably not.
Yeah, it's the same exact joke.
And so Tickle rode great, obviously, and Star Racing finally. Have they ever won? No, they never won.
And we talked to Bobby Regan after the show. He said they've actually been racing since 1998.
Yeah, they did. Johnson Brothers.
Yeah. This is what I noticed. Like, at the beginning of the year, Regan and Phoenix said they were going to win a race this year, no matter what. And then I noticed in the East Coast races, this is just a... Can I say the word observation? Can I say that?
Yeah, you can. Because, well, actually, before we get too far, let's not forget that you have Racer X's Renthal Redux coming out on Wednesday or maybe tomorrow. So,
If this call doesn't go on too long, we'll both get our columns done by.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope you don't get in trouble for doing a competing website. Not that Pulp's competing, but you know what I mean. I don't know.
Yeah, Pulp is definitely not competition, I can tell you that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
But so everybody read that on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Thanks. And,
Where he gives a T-shirt out. You're giving a T-shirt out to somebody.
Yeah, I'm asking people to send in essays on how they wish the season had gone because so many guys got hurt and there's so many what-ifs.
Yeah.
So I'm putting it on you, the fans, say, all right, what do you want to have happen? And go ahead and talk about aliens coming down and interfere, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Crazy as you want it to be, and I'll give you a T-shirt if you do a good job.
Jason W. at RacerXOnline.
That's right. Just send me an essay. Less than 500 words, please. Don't kill yourself.
Yeah.
And if it's good, I'll give you a shirt. Anyway,
okay.
Regan, Bobby Regan, the team owner and manager of Star. Super good mood at the beginning of the year. They had Tickle, who we know is fast. Heard lots of good things about Max Anstey. They had Gutierrez, Paul Lynn, and the team also, who... Yeah. I think a lot of people were expecting him to be like old school David Villeman.
Yeah.
Didn't exactly get those results. But he rode well.
Because,
but anyway,
just because the old school David Villeman was standing behind him.
yeah. That's maybe why he reminded him of Villeman, because Villeman was standing right there. But on the East Coast, Bobby didn't seem to be in quite as good a mood. I'm just saying. That's what I observed.
Yeah.
The head Izzy and Davalos, he seemed to be somewhat angry at the end of the night.
Yes.
I saw him a few times. And then, man, he was sky high when we saw him Seattle Saturday morning. We're talking to Max Anstey. Bobby came over. He literally shoved 100 DNA shred sticks in my pocket. He was so pumped.
Yeah.
And he must have known. And then after the race, he said he knew they were going to win. And maybe that's why Tickle wasn't excited. I guess they just knew it.
Yeah, it wasn't no big deal. It's like, hey, Brock, how's it going to go tonight? I'm going to win. All right, cool. Because the Star Racing has such a long lineage of winning and dominating.
Yeah, what the heck?
I feel good. I'm happy for them. Star Racing is kind of like been a black hole for a lot of guys, and for one reason or another. And I've spoken to different people about it, but happy for them. That's great. I bought all the hype on Wilhon that one could buy. I completely emptied the shelves of Wilhon hype this week.
Leading up to the race, even.
Yeah, leading up to the race. So
wow. Oh, okay. You thought he was going to win like a couple days before, even not even like during the main event.
No. I bought all the hype that Ping was selling me on Tuesday or whenever we spoke.
Oh wow! So,
but he rode good. He rode really good.
Oh yeah.
And so the first set of brothers to make two different podiums on the same night.
I guess so, but man, I was wrong on the LaRocco thing, so I'm not one for records any longer.
Well, I know the Volin brothers made 125 main. Podium because Talon told me in a podcast earlier that was his proudest moment. So,
yeah, but both classes, that's crazy.
Awesome, yeah. And Cole Seeley, Ping's other guy, I talked to Ping this morning, Monday morning, and he said basically the kid struggled. It's not what he's used to. It's California, not ideal conditions for California riders. So, but
right.
There was something about him. There was.
Yeah, there's always something about Cole. You can feel it.
Yeah, everybody knows it.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah,
yep.
But and Weimer salvaged what could have been a disaster. Salvaged a good night.
Okay, I had 14 hours worth of flying yesterday to get back from Seattle to the middle of nowhere where I live. So I didn't see the TV show yet. From my vantage point, Blake Wharton did not run into Kennard, but I still say that he basically caused all this problem by even attempting to pass his teammate.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know what he was thinking. I haven't watched the race. I had hour and a half of travel time.
Nice. Well, you were worn out.
I was worn out.
Yeah.
I did not watch the race either, but I intend to today to help my column out. And I don't know what you're doing. I mean, even if he didn't touch him, he came in hard. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Trey Kennard could have just gone in the lead and checked out, and Weimer was down on the ground, and who knows how that would have played out. And points could have been made up. And I'm sure that Mike LaRocco is probably beating down Blake Wharton still right now.
He's going to be claiming that he fell down the stairs when we see him.
Yeah.
He's going to have all the bad advice excuses.
Not a smart move, no doubt about it.
I don't understand. And Kennard pretty much said so much on the podium.
He did. He did.
Yeah, he said some people don't ride smart sometimes, and I guess he didn't mean himself.
I don't think he did. I don't want to ruin your column coming out, or my column coming out. But anything else catch your eye? Anything else?
Here's something I'll point out is that Weimer said that he didn't, because Kennard fell in the second turn. It was just a mess. You know what I mean?
Right.
He didn't know that happened.
Oh yeah.
So Weimer said the whole main event, he was, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, Kennard got the whole shot. Oh, my God, oh, my God.
Right.
And then he crosses the finish line and then figured out what was going on. Or they might have lapped him. At some point, Kennard got lapped. I don't know if he got lapped by Weimer. I know he got lapped by Tickle.
Yeah, I don't think Weimer lapped him.
No. Tickle did lap Kennard. But, yeah, Weimer did not know. He thought that it was slipping away from him the entire 15 laps.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And Kyle Cunningham rode good 450s. That was my observation. Jumped up real well.
Yeah, any idea what his plans are for the summer? Are they staying with that team? Or?
Yes, trying to stay with the team, trying to ride a 250F, but the team is a 450 team, and John Mitchiff, the team manager there, who I earlier said there was no team manager on that team, but John Mitchiff, the team manager of the team, told me that they want him. They're trying to work it out, but now with his 450 ride on the weekend, maybe there's a spot on a 450 for him on the team.
Because Tedesco's hurt, or
no,
with both of them?
They need another guy. Yeah, Tedesco's coming back, so.
So they would just have both of them. Well, yeah. He's in Regal's spot, I guess.
Yes, exactly. They would have they put up with Regal, who is a mystery wrapped in a riddle, and
he's gone.
Oh, well, yeah, he's off the team. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't at either of the last two races.
Yeah, no, he's fired. Reardon's fired, too, or quit. You'll just never read about it. You'll just never. No one will tell anybody. No one will talk about it.
Nope. Reardon is, I believe, still suffering from injuries from Anaheim 1.
Yes.
Somehow. He's even come back and ridden again since then.
Yeah, should be back any time now. But frustrating sometimes for a guy like me when I get in trouble for reporting. When guys don't show up for 10 weeks. But anyway.
Yeah, Regal not being injured, not racing, just nothing to see here, move along.
Aliens, dude. Aliens got him. I don't know what these people think.
Is he going to privateer it or something? Surely he's not retired at 18 years old or whatever the heck.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, and then one last thing before I let you go. Talked to Jim Perry at the end of the night. I'm going to put this in my column, but he was certainly interested in what Tim Ferry was going on, huh? Certainly, he.
Actually, not at all. I don't think he was even. I don't think it was even a blip on his radar.
You
seeing
could
Timmy
see
on the Yamaha.
That he knew all stops were going to be pulled out to try to see what he could do.
I don't think he.
He actually had
zero interest completely when he heard about Timmy on the Yamaha.
No.
And then when you brought it up and he put the Mathis Ferry combination together, then I think his interest was like negative.
It actually went from somewhat to nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about it, but now that you bring it up, I'm angry.
I know.
Or something along those
lines.
Yeah,
I know. All right. Well, too bad you're not playing along. Well, hey, thanks.
I thought I was supposed to be good cop, bad cop. You want to plant the seed? Was that the goal?
Yeah, I guess, but forget it. You ruined everything.
It was much more comical with Jimmy completely denying all interest with you on Saturday night and you constantly prodding him. It was great comedy.
I know. But,
he gave you credit for Budge Creek 03, though.
He did. I know. A little piece of him died when he did it, but he did do it.
He did give you credit, yep.
Yes. All right, well, hey, man, thank you. I'm taking time away from the Renthal Racer X Redux column, so get to it. I'll get to mine, and thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. We will meet. We'll meet on the web with a column shootout.
Yeah, that's it. All right, man. Thanks.
See ya. No problem. Bye.